The following podcast is made possible thanks to the support of subscribers like you. Subscribe to the show using Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player. And now, on with the show.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Discussing Comics. I am Kyle Jones, and I want to say welcome back for the first time in a little while, Mr. Lee Shackelford. Lee, how are you?
I'm okay. About as well as can be expected during a pandemic, but, you know, I'm hanging in there. And glad to be visiting you on Discussing Comics for a change.
Awesome. Awesome. I am going to do my very best, since this is Tuesday and it's normally Doctor Who Discussing Who time. I'm going to not say Discussing Who other than right now for the entire episode. Knock on wood. But I also want to say welcome back, Clarence Brown. Clarence, how are you?
Hey, man, I'm doing great. And, you know, I say this every time. Happy to be on another episode with you guys.
Awesome. 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 Well, I am super excited to have the three of us on together for Discussing Comics. And our topic this time is going to take us into the other spectrum of Batman and Superman. Notice I did not say Batman versus Superman. I said Batman
Superman.
Getting started early. Here we go. Hey.
That's why I've suggested this in the first place.
Exactly. I mean, go back to the very beginning of our Discussing Network, and I still hear Lee Shackelford saying, when I say, what did you think of this movie? And he says, I absolutely hated this movie. But I have a feeling you didn't hate this. So, Lee, tell us why you wanted to do World's Finest.
To me, it's the antidote and the antithesis of Batman versus Superman, or Batman v. Superman, as whatever it's called. Everything that I think is wrong about that is right in the Batman Superman movie, also known as World's Finest. And I just wanted us to, you know, to back up and look at this little jewel and to talk about that. Talk about what's great about it. Something positive about Batman and Superman together.
Why don't we get into it? And you know what? Just because I love doing this, I'm going to say, if you have not seen World's Finest, this animated version of Batman and Superman meeting each other, go out, watch those three episodes, put us on pause, probably before you go out and watch the episodes, then come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers.
Spoilers. Spoilers. Spoilers. Spoilers.
Our spoiler warning has gone out, and we are back to review World's Finest. World's Finest is an animated Batman-Superman movie set in the DC Animated Universe, originally airing as the 16th through the 18th episodes of Superman the Animated Series Season 2. It originally aired in a movie-styled format on the 4th of October, 1997. It details the first meeting between Superman and Batman in the DCAU. So some review, and Clarence, why don't you take it first? Some review, what did you think of this story?
I thought it was really good. It managed to pit these two juggernauts of superheroes together. And while there was some conflict, I feel like the conflict they had was smartly done. It was didn't really come from a place of I want to cut your throat or kill you.
Right.
It was more about a battle of brains, which I very much enjoyed. And then it flips to the other side where I think, you know, if we want to compare this to the Batman v Superman movie, they do a great job of having a team up on the other side that made it that much more intriguing. So I very much enjoyed this. What about you guys?
Awesome. Lee.
Well, since I suggested it, I think, you know, I can go on and on and on about what everything I love about this. But I echo what Clarence said, that it becomes more of a contest of brains and even more than that, but of styles. I mean, of personal styles, because I think the big thing that this story gets right is that Batman is a creature of the night, and he's about vengeance and about the underworld and all these things. And Superman, as depicted here, is all about the daytime. You know, he's about light and about truth and about, you know, letting the light in and about the positives, about trying to see what the world could be. You know, to Batman, the world is broken, and to Superman, the world is a place of possibilities. They're not going to get along, but these circumstances force them to work together. And what I think that teaches us as impressionable young people watching this is that you don't have to agree with somebody about everything to work with them. Yeah.
Good point. Good point. So for me, it took me a moment, I'll be honest. It took me a moment to get back into the animation style, particularly seeing it not in the HD format and, you know, not upscaled and all of the great things, you know, that have come in the years since. However, that was only about 2 minutes before I, you know, get used to it. And it reminded me of why Batman, the animated series, was so revolutionary, in my opinion, for its time, because I quickly forgot that this was Saturday morning television. And I know the animated series Batman was syndicated or on Fox in the afternoon. That said, it still had appropriateness for kids, but yet it had an adult feel to it, to where if you were an adult, you didn't feel like you were watching, oh, let's say Super Friends from the 70s, because right. That was definitely dated. I thought the story was good. I enjoyed it. I didn't get bored. And I loved the characters playing off each other. I saw this more of a conflict between Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne than mm-hmm. any conflict between Batman and Superman.
With the really kind of a masterstroke idea is that in their secret identities, what are they fighting over?
Lois.
Lois.
It's just a good idea.
Isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
and one of the things that falls by the wayside as Batman goes along, if you start back from the very beginning of Batman, is that Bruce Wayne is not just a millionaire, but he's a millionaire playboy. And we do sort of lose that as time goes by. We think of him as just being the rich guy. And, you know, of course, Batman is a lot more interesting. But here we're taking that very seriously, is that Clark is a little worried about Lois because she's going out with, you know, with Hugh Hefner, basically. It's like, hey.
Yeah. So, and it's such a great example of, you know, when you have a character that doesn't see who is behind the mask. Mm-hmm. And she has Clark. I mean, the thing that's been going on forever with her, you know, not really loving Clark at first, but loving Superman.
Right.
And you have this on the other side where you have Bruce Wayne, and she is smitten over, of course, like you said, the playboy. But she would probably be repulsed by Batman. So I love how that's kind of twisted there, where she loves, you know, his normal person versus his alter ego. Yeah, I just thought it was perfectly played in this three-parter.
Yeah, and, you know, I may have read this somewhere or have heard this, but I know I've been aware of this concept. And we may have even talked about it when we were talking about Batman versus Superman. But they've always been, whereas Superman is the secret identity of Clark Kent, and mm-hmm. right. Batman is, you know, he has Bruce Wayne as the secret identity of, but he's really, you know, Batman is the core of who he is. Bruce Wayne is just a front, whereas Clark Kent is who he is, and the name Superman is just a front. It's totally reversed with them.
Yeah. Yeah, in his great book, the Great Comic Book Heroes, Jules Pfeiffer says that that's something that always bugged him about Batman, is that in order to be Batman, Bruce Wayne has to put on his bat shirt and his bat shorts and his bat tights and his bat boots and jump in his Batmobile to go out to fight crime. All Superman has to do is to wake up in the morning to be Superman. Yeah. He's already Superman. Yeah,
very yep.
It's so a really good point. And it's always World's Finest is probably the comic book that I – first had my hands on. I think that I kind of remember being at a garage sale or some kind of swap and shop thing, and I would have been 5 or 6 years old, And I saw this comic book that had Batman on it. And, you know, of course, this is if this was 1966 or 67, you know, I was living and breathing the 66 Batman TV series. And so here's this magazine with Batman on the cover. And I begged for it. And so my mom put down 12 cents for me to get this copy of World's Finest. And I don't still have the magazine, of course. But I was fascinated by Batman and Superman being in this story together. And as the years have gone by in that magazine, you could, if you followed it in those times, you know, a lot of times the struggle was to make Batman be competitive with Superman. If Superman can already do everything, what do you need Batman for? Well, it seems like the problem the writers were struggling with. And so one of the things that I admire about this script is that the first time Batman and Superman come anywhere close to each other, Batman grabs Superman by the wrist and throws him over his shoulder.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, okay, we've established this right up front. And he's got a piece of kryptonite in his pocket, which unlike in the cruel Batman versus Superman, he's showing it to him to impress on him why it's so urgent that he gets the Joker and Luthor, because he's got 20 pounds of this stuff. Get it?
Yeah.
I'm trying to help you, you big blue cheese. So, but I'm going to do it my way. I love that.
So what do you think of the characterization of these two characters? Do you think they checked all the right boxes here?
I really think they did from my point of view. I really didn't notice any of them acting outside of their norm, which you can, as it goes along, there's one point near the end where Superman can't see through one of Luthor's lead walls. Mm-hmm. And then I think Batman like implies to just tear it down, which he does. It's like, yeah, now you're getting the picture.
Right.
So kind of like what Lee stated before, their approach toward being a superhero is very, very different. Of course, you know, Batman more of a vigilante type hero, whereas the boy in blue is trying to do everything perfect and upright. So just very different styles, which I found both very, very, very interesting. And I don't think they strayed too much from their norm, but it was interesting to see Superman have to deal with Joker, which he's not used to, I guess, the games, I would say.
Yeah.
So here's what I find interesting, and I want to talk about Lois next before we get into Lex and the Joker. But the whole time I was watching this, I kept forming in my head, how could you make this into live action? What if this had been the basis of Superman meets Batman? I'm not saying versus, meets Batman. Mm. And you could have had, and this would have been totally, totally cool, you could have had Jesse Eisenberg playing the Joker, being maniacal. You could have had another person playing Luthor. And instead of having Lois in there, they're having this person that they are trying to save, who is this emissary from this island named Diana, who then they realize at the end of it is Wonder Woman. You could have factored all of that stuff in there and kept this same story. And I think it would have been a wonderful live action movie.
That made some sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing that I think that this does that the movie really falls short of is that we don't really get these really good moments of Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne together as their normal selves, which you do get that a little bit. I think they meet at some event in the movie for like 2 seconds and kind of stare each other down.
Yeah.
But here you get really great moments surrounding somebody we know that Clark loves. And you got to kind of see him play on the sidelines while this, you know, like we said before, this playboy comes in and sweeps her off her feet. He's kind of just left there. So, you know, good reason for them to meet as their normal person. And then Batman's whole reason for being there, another good, well-written reason for them to interact, which is just totally missing from the movie to me.
All right. So what did you guys think of Lois, this characterization of how Lois was made out for this story, or for this series, for that matter?
Yeah, there's so many different Loises as time has gone by that, again, me as a fan of the Golden Age comics, this is a return to the original Lois, the Joe Siegel and Jerry Schuster Lois, who is enterprising and you can't say no to her. And she's a little smartass, but it's cute. You know, she doesn't really rub people the wrong way. And she does not know that Clark is Superman. For some reason, she doesn't suspect, but she, the way they play her here in the comics, she just hates him, you know, but the way they play her here is that they're friends, but she can't resist rubbing his nose in the fact that he's from small town America. And that's just something she plays with. If she thought it really hurt his feelings or something, she wouldn't do it, but she will not let it go. And I just think that's really interesting. And it's easy to feel like she's completely self-absorbed, but I don't think she is. I think she really, you know, wants the right things to happen in the world. And that's why she loves Superman. You know, that's what I think. And it's, of course, it's Dana Delaney. And, you know, that cute purring voice of hers is the reason why she's cast here. And she's just, it's just wonderful.
No, I agree with everything Lee said. I will add that it kind of makes Lois feel shallow in a way. And I hate to say that, really.
Yeah, I'm trying to defend my view that she's not self-absorbed.
Yeah.
Yeah, she kind of is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is the age-old question. What is about, you know, a beautiful woman that makes her like a man? You know, yeah. Is it his money? Is it, it goes both ways, not just women. You know, is it the money? Is it the job? Is the power? What I do find comforting that is that we know somewhere along the way she does fall for the nerdy guy Clark, which but yeah, that always puzzles me. But I don't think the depiction of Lois here is any different, is much different from what I know from what I've seen her in different various platforms, comics or movies as well. So yeah, I thought she was pretty much spot on. I was a little surprised that she was so quick. I mean, as Clark was so quick that she was, you know, trying to move to the Gotham branch.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Yeah, I did think that was a little like, oh, wow, she's moving fast. Wow, he really has skills or something like that.
But that's what sweep her off her feet means.
I mean. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was like, wow. But I remember as a kid, and I know if I were to go back and look at all the Superman issues, I would find it. But help me out here, Lee. I'm pretty darn sure I remember reading as a kid that I had an issue of Superman or Action Comics, one of the two, and I'm reading it, and it's on the cover, you see Superman / Clark Kent. I think he's in Superman's, you know, the Superman costume, but he has the glasses on. And basically on the inside, the story is about he uses the glasses. Somehow he hypnotizes people to make them not realize that he's Superman.
I remember that idea being mooted. I don't know if that was John Byrne's reboot or what, but I like the idea that there's something, a perception filter that's in his glasses. It really does help to explain why this Hulk with the glasses is invisible to people as Superman. But what fun here to live for a little while in a DC universe where Lois discovers that Bruce Wayne is Batman, but she still doesn't know that Clark is Superman.
Yes. But I kind of have to give her a bit of a pass, though, because you have the world's greatest detective here that you know, doesn't even figure it out until he puts a tracker beacon on him. So,
all right.
So
this is actually maybe my single favorite thing in this movie. And I watched it again this afternoon, or I just watched this little bit of it to time it. Do you know how long it is in this storytelling between when Clark looks through Bruce's mask and learns his secret and Bruce says, "You peaked," to when they salute each other, like when Bruce acknowledges that he knows that Clark is Superman? Do you know how much time passes in this movie?
How long?
It's 90 seconds between when Superman knows who Batman is and Batman knows who Superman is. We got that out of the way. And you think in Batman v Superman, we spent a half an hour of the movie doing this.
Yeah.
And I still had this animated film in my mind. And I thought, you know, there's a much more elegant way to dispense with this. Put a tracker on his cape and follow him to his house. Can we just move on, please?
Because that's what Batman would do.
That's what Batman would do.
But instead, he gets the bat armor and goes, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, and I understand the need to up the stakes for a big money action movie. But really and seriously, guys, it seems to me like when you compare these two movies, one of them says when you encounter people who have the same basic ideas as you do but different approaches, learn how to work with them. Yeah. The big money movie that way more people saw says when you meet people that you disagree with, kill them.
Unless their names are Martha.
Just to bank on the point you mentioned earlier about them acting out of character. Yeah. Again, like as we relate this back to the movie, you know, I can see Batman going off his rocker a little bit if we're talking about Batman v Superman. I can see that, you know. I can see that happening.
You could argue that Batman has always been off his rocker. I mean, you think of his origin story. It's a trauma.
But like as I look back, what really kind of sits wrong with me about that movie is that there are moments when it looks like Superman wants to rip Batman's guts out.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, is that really what Superman would do? Would he look that mean and it looked like he want to kill him that bad? Oh. And I'm like, probably not.
I hate everything about the Superman in this series of movies. That's not Superman. It's a betrayal of who Superman is
You know, he's more the Earth 3 Ultraman in many aspects. And it's not the actor's fault. It's the way it's portrayed. Because even down to the costume, they muted the colors, making, you know, the bright red more of a crimson, darker red. The blue is more of a navy instead of the bright blue.
Yep. Yeah. I've got a whole lecture in my intro cinema class about this. What the hell happened to colors in movies? Yeah. Colors aren't cool anymore. Everything's got to be gray. Yeah. So
and it's funny because, I mean, I get what you're saying, Lee, 100%. But I actually really enjoyed Man of Steel, the first Henry Cavill Superman reboot. I really enjoyed it until probably the moment where everybody kind of said, what the what?
Uh-huh.
That moment lasts what? 5 minutes of the film?
Yeah. Because
Yeah.
He would find another way.
Yeah.
Or I don't care anymore. No, you're right. I remember that. I really enjoyed it too. I was upset about all the buildings falling over. It was still a little 9/11. I was surprised. Well, that's right. So I couldn't believe that they were knocking buildings over with people in them. I thought, you know, this isn't fantasy, folks. We really just did this, and you know. Yeah. So I was upset about that. But yeah, and then he murdered somebody, and I want to say, well, if you're so smart, what do you think he should have done? Because it didn't look like there was any other way out of that. But I don't know.
But then this is Superman, and there's something about Superman that sets the expectation, sets the scale for other superheroes. And maybe it's because he's the quote unquote first, meaning he's the one that's still around in 2020 from way back in 1938.
Exactly.
But regardless,
well, his very name says he's better than us.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. That's deep. And it's like that. We get in this mode, that I guess the end of the odds that where everything has to be dark.
Yeah.
Everything has to be gritty.
Yep.
And which could be in part due to the success of the Nolan Batman movies.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, we got in this mode where everything has to be dark and gritty. And I don't like my Superman dark and gritty.
I mean, Batman was dark to begin with.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you could apply that universally. I don't know.
You know, Clarence, it's funny that you said that because it's almost parallel with the comic industry itself. It, in the late 80s, early 90s, went into this dark and gritty where everything was dark and everybody, had guns and everybody had, ammunition pouches on their costumes for no absolute reason whatsoever. Right. And you're right. It did make it into a dark and gritty movie.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. And I was saying, and we didn't see this. I mean, this is 97. This had some, you know, kind of, this wasn't just somebody got kidnapped and, you know, let's go find them. This is somebody trying to kill somebody. So, I mean, it's not easy material that we're watching.
Interesting.
So what were you fixing to say?
No, well, I was going to ask, as compared to like the comics around that time, maybe much earlier than 97, of course, that time when you said things started to get gritty, what were Superman stories looking like during that period?
Death, literally. Because,
oh, that's right.
Because in 90,
we killed him.
90 or 91, that's when the death of Superman came out. Ironically, the thing that started the let's get grim, let's get gritty is at first Alan Moore's Watchmen. That was the first catalyst. That was in 85, 86. And then right after that, there was a book called The Dark Knight Returns. And it was set in a future where Batman and Superman fought each other. And it was the source material for Batman versus Superman.
And there was an explosion of independent publishers, too. And each of them was trying to, you know, get the attention of a mainstream audience. And some of them were trying to outdo each other by being darker, you know, more vicious, even downright sadistic than the others. So that played into it, too. But as somebody who was buying Watchmen as each issue came out, and what a long year that was, waiting from month to month to find out what was going to happen next in Watchmen. Yeah, I just couldn't express to somebody who was born after that time how galvanized everybody who cared about comics was about Watchmen. It just took our breath away. And part of it was that we felt that we were not being condescended to. That this was Alan Moore saying, okay, what if really and truly, really, there were costume superheroes? So in the first place, why are these people dressing up? And in the second place, none of them have superpowers. So how are they, you know, and trying to solve those problems? And the real answer is you'd have to be kind of messed up. Something bad would have happened to you. And, you know, and that's been the Batman story from the beginning, you know. And then, you know, the catastrophe happens in that world. There really is a Superman, and it changes everything. This guy can do anything. What do we do with him? You know, should we be afraid of him? Should we, you know, and so Alan Moore was asking those questions that many of us had asked, you know, over the years, and it did. It kind of changed everything. And then I think a lot of writers were trying to catch up to that and say, okay, let's take these things seriously. And that means that things got dark. But John Byrne's reboot of Superman showed, I thought, that it didn't have to. He was real interested in the science. He really wanted to explain how Superman shaves and what his uniform is actually made of, and how it happens that if he's under the light of a red sun, he doesn't have superpowers, but under a yellow sun, he does. You know, what is it about, you know, that spectrum of light and the energy of those stars that makes it different, things like that. And I just always remember, I love this, that he's got a set of weights in his living room. He has this whole, you know, a whole bench with all these big weights on it. And we see Lois come over at one point, and she's, you know, picking up one of his hand weights. And she says, I thought this guy must really seriously work out. That's just there for show. It's for people to come in and make exactly the conclusion that she makes. I thought that's brilliant.
But see, what's also cool about Byrne's revision of Superman in that post-crisis continuity was this is when we get rid of nerd Clark Kent and have Clark being, I played football in high school. I was just an ordinary kid. He doesn't have that, you know, I've got to slump as Clark. I have to, you know, yes, I'm still wearing the glasses, but they're not as, you know, the thick glasses, and he's not picked on by people, et cetera, and so forth. And probably one of the people that would be picking on him would be Lex Luthor, who totally was changed into more of a businessman that we see this same incarnation in this video, the story that we watched. So let's talk about Lex. What did we think of this interpretation of Lex Luthor.
So for me, I think this is the version of Lex Luthor that I've largely been familiar with. For some reason, the business billionaire, because he's going to get Joker $1 billion.
Right.
This is the version of Lex Luthor that I've always gravitated to. Mm-hmm. Even when I look back at, you know, the great first Superman movie, I love that movie. But still, I think for me, this is the version of Lex that makes the most sense for me. A little less zany, more serious, more calculated. And that's kind of what I like about this character when he's doing it right.
Yeah, absolutely. Agree right down the line. And it's the great Clancy Brown is doing his voice here. And I just love the way the character is drawn here. And it really struck me. I know we'll get to Mark Hamill here as the Joker in a second and the whole character design of the Joker for this. But just as Batman and Superman can't possibly live in the same world, and in this movie they have to, the Joker and Luthor are as different as two characters could possibly be.
Yeah.
Luthor is all about acquisition. He just has to have things and to be the one with the most, you know, whatever. And he just never looks happy. It's not making him happy, you know? he doesn't want to be happy. He just wants to control things and to have them. And the Joker just apparently doesn't know if he's got things or not. It's just not important to him. He's nuts, of course, but he's in this for a good time.
He's bitch.
Nobody was more bat guano crazy than the Joker. Yeah. And I love getting the two of them together because you can sense Luther's impatience with this character. Yeah. You know, because he doesn't like people who laugh too much, you know, but he's got something he wants.
Well, see, one thing that I like about this version of Luther is my understanding of his issue with Superman. If you boil it all, he's going to say he's an alien and he's not from here, et cetera, and so forth. But his underlying issue is he's more popular than me. You know, I the people like him better. That's how I interpret it, is the people of Metropolis see Superman as this great person who is coming to save the day. Luther wants that adoration.
Yeah. It's not fair. This guy just shows up and, yeah, Luther's worked hard for all this stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And I also think Luther sees Superman as just being in the way. And so just as an obstacle, he just wants him out of the picture. He can finally get stuff done if the big blue Boy Scout will just take a hike.
And like, I think equally is as interesting about Joker and Lex in this story is their sidekicks. I know we'll get into it, but I really enjoy it.
Yeah, we got to talk about Mercy and Harley. This is of course, the original Harley Quinn also. So
yes.
This is where she comes from.
So I am itching to get to Harley Quinn too. I want to get to the Joker. So let's talk about the Joker for a moment. And before we do, as I'm watching this, I want to say again, Cary Brown does an awesome interpretation of the Joker. And I want to insert an episode of Listen, Rinse, Repeat. It is an awesome podcast about washing your hands, something to listen to. So be sure to check out Listen, Rinse, Repeat for more episodes just like this one.
This is it, Joker.
It? I am not it, you bet brain nincompoop.
Surrender and return to Arkham before anyone else gets hurt.
Oh, bats. The joke's on you. After all these years, I have ultimately discovered the one single simple solitary syllable, or is that double syllable? One word, your ultimate weakness.
No more jokes, Joker.
Always taking fun out of everything. Okay, I'll tell you. Remember that time when the Big Red Boy Scout decided
Please
to spend
don't.
Two excruciatingly boring hours trying to prove who's the alpha male? I'm gonna say it.
You can go.
Martha!
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.
Again, it sounded absolutely wonderful. Lee, you did a great job of Batman. And I just think Carrie is awesome as the Joker. And of course, Mark Hamill too.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm no Kevin Conroy, but, did my best.
So let's talk about the Joker. What was your interpretation of this version, this animated version of the Joker?
I want to know more about the direction and the art direction of this series, because I've seen a lot of the Superman episodes and a lot of the Batman episodes, of course, that spawned this series. And I have always thought it hilarious that everybody in the world knows who Mark Hamill is, but they may not know what he has actually spent most of his professional career doing. I think that's great. It's not Luke Skywalker. I just like to sit down with some of these animators and talk to them about the animation director, Ralph Bakshi, because it really seems to me like what they were doing is, what if Ralph Bakshi had made a movie about the Joker? Because he doesn't look like anybody else in this universe. His way of moving and the way they depict his face and his facial expressions is almost a different style from the rest of the film, but not quite. It just makes him look like he's very weird, which is kind of the whole point of his projected persona. But it's the kind of stretch and squash and almost inhuman motion that you get in the films of Ralph Bakshi. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, then there's no way to explain it in a few words or conjure it. But I really want to know. I want to sit down with this director one of these days and say, so, Joker, Ralph Bakshi, am I right? So, maybe at Comic-Con or something like that. Anyway.
Cool. So, Clarence, what about you? How was your reception of – how do you like this Joker?
I feel like he was – okay, when you think of Joker, you think of crazy, maniacal, just kind of unhinged, which he is very much unhinged in this series as well. But I do feel like he was a little bit more planned or calculated is the word I keep using than I usually expect him to be. Because he actually went to Lex with a decent plan. And I was kind of surprised by that. He thought this through.
I think Luthor was pretty surprised too.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. That makes sense. Yeah.
So from that point of view, I thought it was a good quest to get $1 billion. You know, actually having a good plan to take down Superman. Now, you know, when he first goes up against him, I thought, you know, he might not survive. But He does what he does, and I thought it was a great job and great planned out method of actually, you know, Superman's only weakness to take down Supes. You know, I thought he was great. I mean, not to mention, you know, Mark Hamill's awesome as always. He is the crazy. He is the character you look to be crazy in the DC universe, just unhinged.
Yeah.
Not Batman v Superman, Lex. No, Joker is the person you look to for that. So I love the performance here.
So here's what I think is the strength that Paul Dini and Bruce Timm gave to the Joker for this series. The strength that I think they gave him was the creation of Harley Quinn, because for the first time, the Joker had a Robin. You know, the Joker had a sidekick that was equally as cuckoo as he was, who was madly in love with him, no matter how bad she got treated, and was whimsical and funny. And I think some of the great things that we like about this version of the Joker, yes, Mark Hamill was brilliant, but I think it's the pairing of Harley Quinn. Thoughts?
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely agree. Yeah. And I have to think that people know that when they did this animated series, the writer Paul Dini was the one tasked with writing these first stories that were going to – the Batman adventures that were going to have the Joker in them. And he, as I understand it, was frustrated by the fact that the Joker didn't have anybody to talk to. And also that he was friends with Arlene Sorkin. Is the story that I know. And he knew this kind of born yesterday, cartoon Broadway showgirl voice that she did. And that got him thinking that what if the Joker had a Joker, you know, a little Joker, you know, that was his sidekick, that more like because, you know, the Joker in the playing card is usually, you know, a traditional Harlequin character. So he said, Harley Quinn, I'll call her that. And now that character is like a franchise of our own. But this is where it comes from these animated shows. And I would argue that especially the way Arlene Sorkin voices her and the way they write her and depict her, I would advocate that Harley Quinn is crazier than the Joker is.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
So would you like me to add a little bit of a more interesting layer to story you just said?
Yeah.
So not only is the voice that she used, but Arlene Sorkin also has blonde hair to go with that. And the character of Harley Quinn in part was inspired by watching his friend Arlene Sorkin on Days of Our Lives playing a character named Calliope Jones.
That's right. Calliope, was on
Days of Our Lives, who was this zany, kooky, Harley Quinnish type character. And a little bit of trivia here, or just a little tidbit, her co-star on Days of Our Lives was a character named Eugene Bradford. And this gentleman was none other than John DeLancey, who went on to play Q in Star Trek.
That's right.
So just a kind of cool tie-in right there.
Tie them all together. We drew a line from Harley Quinn to Captain Picard.
There you go. I will say this, but before we move on, this is my favorite version of Harley Quinn, more so than the version that we see today. I would much rather this version of Harley Quinn be what's in, but I know it's not as hip and as popular as Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn.
Yeah, and again, it's got to be darker. It's got to be more vicious. It's got to, you know, have a horrible backstory. But I enjoy Harley Quinn. You kind of hope that she's not going to get hurt too badly.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because now, by today's standards, you can barely think of Joker without thinking of Harley Quinn. They kind of like come together now.
Yeah.
Which is funny because in the newest, I think there's a series on DC Universe. I've seen like one or two episodes, but there she's kind of emancipated. Is that the right word? She's kind of broken free from the Joker. So it's a little bit different, but it's kind of crazy how this character is kind of taking a life of her own. You know, if you talk about the movie that just recently came out with Margot Robbie, or even this TV show that's in its second season.
Right. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny over the years, because of her popularity, you've taken Harley Quinn from being just that Mr. J sidekick or Hey Puddin to being an almost anti-hero. And recently they have introduced, because of that, I think this was in Batman 89, they've come up with a new mysterious villain that I think that they may pair with the Joker, and her name is Punchline. So I don't know anything about her. I just know she's a new character within the last 6 months to a year called Punchline, and that may be someone they're creating and to give back that character accomplice for the Joker, since Harley Quinn is her own thing now.
Yeah, since she has moved on.
And I'll just add that the new style of Harley Quinn is the only real costume that I've seen where I've been like, parents, no,
do not
dress up your kids at Comic-Con like Harley Quinn. What are you thinking?
Yeah. Yeah. When one of these little girls rings your doorbell on Halloween, you go, oh my God, does your mother know you're out like this? Yeah.
Like, no, people, please.
But animated series, Harley Quinn, sure. Yeah, you go.
Yeah.
You go.
Yeah,
right
let's ahead. Go for this one. Yeah. Let's take it back.
So what do we think of Mercy Gray?
You got to wonder why somebody like that does, you know? What is she getting out of this? I'm always fascinated by characters like that. And there's been a lot of them, you know, in fiction over the years. This total, you know, take the bullet dedication to somebody who brushes them aside and is relentlessly evil. I don't understand, but I'm glad she's in this just for the sake of that hilarious fight with the Harley Quinn. So
you know, she really, I could take her or leave her in any form that I've ever seen. She's never been interesting to me. She is everything that Harley Quinn isn't to me. Right. She has no style. She has no substance, no style, no nothing. She's just, to me, a henchman.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
But clearly kind of a male fantasy thing. I mean, why that outfit? You know, wouldn't it be more practical in her job to have some pants on, you know? But if she is told to dress like that just to be titillating, it doesn't seem to have any impact on Luther. I don't understand.
Okay, I'll go one step further than that. Isn't she are sleeping in the same room as Lex, because she's right there when Batman, you know, out of the blue, you don't hear a door open or anything, but when Batman there she is.
You mean when Batman clocks her in the face?
Exactly. Over his shoulder. Yeah.
That's so good.
Bam.
Oh.
Yeah.
We don't go to violence.
Nope.
Let's do it.
But given that relationship, that really messed up relationship, I think that while he's sleeping, she may sit in a chair at the end of his, at the foot of his bed and just watch him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Creepy.
Well, when you're that powerful, that much money, and you have to have somebody around you 24/7, you know, not a bad choice.
Okay. This line, this was in episode 2. This made me laugh because this was so totally unintended, but it must have been in my subconscious whenever I wrote that listen, rinse, repeat skit. But whenever Batman says, "It's over, Joker," I hear you, Lee, saying, "It's over, Joker."
That's right. He actually does say it in this, doesn't he?
He does say it. So what we've really not talked much about the story in detail. Are there any story points? I mean, we've covered the characters, which I think is a conversation within itself. But were there any story points that you guys wanted to bring up?
Not in particular. It's really a fairly simple, you know, as far as the plot, a fairly simple story. I like how Bruce Wayne seems a little naive as to what Lex's intentions are at the very beginning. Or maybe he does anticipate it. I don't know. But he's working with him on this technology for these, you know, killer drones. And, you know, Lex is thinking of making more money, more power, wants to sell them to the government. And, you know, Bruce Wayne's not having that. So I thought that was pretty interesting to see them two kind of working together at the beginning. And as far as the overall plot, it was not that deep. I think like most of the shows I love or the episodes I love, it was about the interactions more than the actual plot. You know, Joker had 2 tries and of course he failed. So
I was zeroing in on the robots too, and maybe for different reasons. You know, I think it is the first one released of the great Fleischer Brothers Superman cartoons from the 40s, which I guess were the first animated films of any superhero, right? Some comic historian.
Well, I would think they would almost have to be considering if these were made in the 40s and Superman was 38.
Yeah, I mean, screen animation was pretty young, and so were comic book superheroes. Yeah, I guess you're right. But anyway, the very first one, I think it's the first one, is called Mechanical Monsters, and it's Superman fighting these super powerful robots. Anytime in an animated series you see Superman fighting a robot that's giving him a run for his money, I think this is a little wink back to the origins of those. But in the big climactic fight with the robots that keep getting bigger and bigger, apparently, or bigger and bigger ones keep coming out. You also see Superman and Batman being forced to learn how to work together to play off each other's strengths. And I really liked that. Very interesting that the robots are programmed to keep learning. So Superman tries something and then he tries it again and it doesn't work. Because the robot has already learned that. And the solution then is to get the robots fighting each other. And I said, that's from The Incredibles. So I had to go back and look at the dates again. No, the fight in The Incredibles is from Batman Superman. Yes. So, and I don't know if that was, intentional or if that's a wink in this direction or not. But that is the same solution to that problem in The Incredibles. So I really like that. just if we're kind of wrapping up things about this, I also really enjoyed all the music in this, and I don't remember being conscious of it before. The person who wrote this music is somebody I don't know, and I can't guess how to say his last name. It's spelled MCCUISTION, Michael McQuistion?
McQuistion?
But somebody will tell us. But I just think it's great. It's an almost cinematic score being done on a budget. And I've often wondered, because this is a Warner Brothers show, how much they can call on things from other Warner Brothers franchise properties. I mean, does John Williams come away owning the music from the Superman movie from the 70s? You know? We can't have Superman come flying in this movie, I don't think, in this going bum, bada, bum, 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 you know?
Yeah.
I don't, or maybe you just don't want to. But when Batman is fighting the gang boss and Superman comes in and just lays that hand on his shoulder, this score goes bum, bum, bum.
And I'll go one step further than that. When I was watching the opening credits, because this mm-hmm. is still in the time where we had opening, you know, this was in the 90s and you still had these big bombastic opening. I wrote down in my notes, I said, Superman the movie meets Dallas. And that's what it reminded me of.
Well, the woman who wrote that score, I feel sure that she, for the theme song for the Batman animated show, I feel sure she must have been told, we want to use the John Williams theme, but not exactly, you know,
yeah,
we need it in another key or something. So yeah, it really sounds like that's what it is, but I love the little quote from it here, but yeah, just throughout, I thought the scoring was really, really effective. It really built these characters and these dramatic moments. And, Metropolis, it's been so long since I have seen one of the Superman animated films that I had forgotten that their Metropolis looks like no place on Earth. And I love that. There's always been this debate about whether or not it's New York City, you know, and where exactly it is. And DC has gone back and forth about whether or not Gotham City are across a bridge from each other. And in this film, we saw Bruce getting on a plane to go back to Gotham City. So apparently not. And so on and so on. You look out people's windows at the skyline in Metropolis, or we go flying over it at the end of this, and it doesn't look like anything. It kind of looks like the Metropolis in the 1920s in Fritz Lang's film, Metropolis. But it doesn't look like New York City or Toronto or, you know, any other
cities.
Metropolis that we know. Yeah, I just love that, because you get the feeling these are artists who sat down to design this. They said, well, why not? Why does the city, why should Metropolis look like every other place in the world? You know?
Yeah.
Good point.
So they had some fun with that. Anyway.
All right. So Clarence, you've already given yours, haven't you?
Yeah. Let me just add one thing really quick. So those robots that Lex was making, along with the help of Wayne Industries, they can actually make those now. if you heard a little something, yes, called Boston Dynamics, go look up their videos on YouTube. They can really make those robots now completely with legs and everything. So just crazy. What, 20 years later?
Right. I got to back that up. Some of the demonstration videos that are out there, you know, publicly for the Boston Dynamics robots will make you sit up and go, wait a minute. I think that's a man in a suit. No, it's not.
The only other things that I had was I wrote down that I thought this was a good thing to revisit. And the reason I say that is I loved the Justice League cartoon. I love Justice League Unlimited. That, to me, is some of the best superhero cartoons that's ever been produced. And they did it really, really well. And if it had not have been for this, these two series, you would not have had the same cartoon style, some of the same writers, the same, you know, storyboarders, etc., move on to make this amazing Justice League, an amazing Justice League Unlimited, which, like I said, was brilliant. Hats off to that. The only other thing, this goes back to Lois. There was one thing that she said that I just started laughing when she said it. She's talking to Bruce and he's asking her about, you know, Superman. And she says, I think he's asking her, how do you get in touch with him? And she says, well, committing a felony helps. Listen, you seem awfully interested in Superman. Do you want me to fix you? You want me to fix the two of you up? And I was like, yeah. This is Saturday morning cartoons. Kudos for them.
Yep.
All righty. So let's give our final rating. And I'll start it off. I'm going to give this a solid 5 gold coins that have Joker faces on them. So 5 Joker coins, Joker cards. There you go. 5 Joker cards. That's what I'm giving.
You know, I really got to think about this once I compare this to Batman v Superman, the great movie that came out a few years back. I'll give this 5 bat cowls. Is it cowl? Cowl? Bat cowls?
Yeah.
Out of 5? Yeah. Great stuff, man. Great stuff.
That are clearly one piece with his cape. If you pull on his cape hard enough, it will pull his cowl off too.
Yeah.
That seems like a design flaw to me.
But it is very, very sturdy. Because yes. It gets chewed up and, you know, the
that's
it gets
right.
chewed you up and whatever.
The running breaths.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But it's all one piece. Anyway, it needs a chin strap, I think, is really what we learned from that.
I'm sitting on the biggest story in the world, and I can't even print it.
That's right. I did love that she – because that's what she'd say. That's exactly right. Yeah. Well, you know I love this movie, so it's no surprise. I got to give it 5 solid kryptonite dragons.
That apparently killed 5 people.
Yeah.
Are they all green kryptonite or different colors?
I'm going to keep them all green just to.
Okay. Just for continuity's sake.
Yeah. But that is a little nod towards John Byrne right there, though, isn't it? Because I think he's the one who introduced the idea that kryptonite is bad for everybody, not just for Kryptonians.
I think it's
basically radioactive. And if you hang on to it long enough, it'll.
Which I had never heard that before for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's kind of from the mid-80s forward, because if I remember right, in the John Byrne stories, Luther thinks he's cute because he's got a ring with a kryptonite stone in it, and that's his insurance policy. But it's also giving him bone cancer, and he doesn't know.
Yeah, see, that makes it much more interesting.
I think it's great, isn't it?
I mean, the business idea of him was the best thing that, you know, they did after Crisis. They even had it so much with him, with his alter persona of everybody trusting Luther and LexCorp. He ran for president and won in the DC universe. And that was Luther for president and Luther won. And then, of course, you know, Superman ultimately takes him down or exposes him. But yeah, they even did that for a while. Gentlemen, this has been fun, but I have one final question. And Lee, since you chose this topic, I'll point to you first. Ooh. Where else might you be found on the internet?
For the duration, I'm going to point people towards the website correctionsurvival.com, which is a bit of a departure for me, but to get into an audio drama serial about incarcerated people. This is a project that I worked on some years ago over a period of years, working with incarcerated men at a maximum security penitentiary to tell their own stories and to make it into an audio drama. And they not only mostly wrote this, but they performed the roles as well. And they are better actors than you might expect. And it ends up being quite an intriguing story. So you can look for Corrections, Survival of the Fittest on your favorite podcatcher, or start at the website, correctionssurvival.com.
I'm going to point people to the Discussing Trek Patreon page, where we're currently running a contest. And we have an image there, which is a crossover image from IDW for Star Trek and Doctor Who. So head on over to patreon.com/discussingtrek. Check out the image, and we're going to give a prize to the best caption for said image. Now, currently, there is only one rather incoherent caption on that post, but the best caption is going to win a Star Trek Discovery Season 2 Blu-ray, along with a 1/2500 scale plastic model of the USS Discovery. So only one person has left a comment right now. So, you know, it's wide open. Wide open, you know.
It's theirs for the taking.
There you go. All right. So I would point everyone who is listening to our YouTube for Discussing Network. It's youtube.com/discussingnetwork. And our latest video stars none other than Mr. Lee Shackelford talking about what does Doctor Who, or what does the Doctor mean to you? And just go check out that video. It's about 3 minutes long. And if you are a fan of Doctor Who, leave us a message, you know, leave us a comment, give us a like. But it's about a 3-minute video, awesomely done by Mr. Lee Shackelford. Gentlemen, again, thank you for being with me on this episode. Love having you on, all three of us on here together. So thanks again. And for everyone listening, we will be back next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.